Howdy ho, folks. It's John here, bringing you all the news I can find in between episodes of Downton Abbey. Not as much happening this week, but we got a few big stories, so let's get to what happened this week. Our very own Mike Beckett, the one and only Cactuar Joe, first alerted me to this story on Andrea Tsang. Title is, Analysts Expect Major Social Game Losses If Sales Tactic Is Banned. More details on games industry in Wired 2. They're referring to what's known as Kampu Gacha, Complete Gacha, a particular sales practice in Japan that's come under fire lately. Gacha is paying to get some random item. It's based on coin-operated vending machines throughout Japan. Complete Gacha is getting a certain set of these randomly selected items to get a grand prize, and Japan's Consumer Affairs Agency made comments that the practice breaks Japanese sales laws, saying it's closer to gambling than sales and may be regulated accordingly. A spin at the virtual wheel costs about 300 yen, or 375 US, and one user somehow racked up about 4 million yen, roughly 50,000 US, of debts inside 2 months. It may not be rolling dice, but in the eyes of Japanese law, it's triggering the same thoughts in your brain. Now, this does not touch other social game revenue, the more traditional kinds like buying special items or just flat paying for progress, and they don't seem to be targeting the pay for random reward part of it. It's the collect the random rewards to get the really good one part that may be illegal. That said, this Kampu Gacha accounts for a staggering portion of Japanese social gaming revenue, so much that the mere hint, the mere suggestion of regulation sent stocks into a free fall. According to Credit Suisse analysts, Gacha, not Kampu Gacha, just the random sales thing, accounts for about 60-70% of all social game sales in Japan. Gree, remember them? The guys that bought that San Fran startup Funzio for $210 million? Gree's stock fell about 23% on this news, and the company lost as much as $700 million as the result. And this is not confined to purely social gaming companies. This affects everybody with a seat at the table. Take Konami, for instance. Games industry reported they had substantial profits in large part due to their social games division, something like an 80% increase in profit to about 23 billion yen from last year, 288 million US. Not small potatoes, and it's kept them afloat even as their console division lagged behind. Their stock dropped 18% on the news. Namco Bandai, 9.5%. Capcom, 6%. This is a very big deal that could hit Japan hard and send out a lot of ripple effects worldwide. Remember, Square Enix has been taking up social gaming as well, and they own a not insignificant number of US properties, like Eidos. I'm not saying Japan shouldn't regulate this, it does sound like a legitimately shady practice, but rather that a stunning portion of the growth of social games may well be based on smoke and mirrors, if not outright deception. I suppose it's fate that Gacha, G-A-C-H-A, short for Gachapon, the onomatopoeia for the noise the machines make, sounds an awful lot like Gotcha, G-O-T-C-H-A. Interesting side note, Gamasutra picked this up. According to the Magid Media Futures 2012 study, Magid being Frank N. Magid Associates, a research and consulting firm that's been around since the 50s, user growth is slowing for social games, and users are, on average, spending less on them. These are small dips. We're talking 36% of social network users that play these games, down only 2 points from last year. An average of $51 per user for the year, down from 78, that kind of thing. Still, the data suggests that the unstoppable behemoth is starting to slow down, and I've been saying all along this stuff can't grow exponentially forever. It had to S-curve at some point, like Will Wright said back in, what was it, 2010? 9, maybe? Whatever. Point is, it's not really going anywhere. It's a major part of the industry going forward, but it's not the magical money train that everybody keeps saying it is. And you know what happens when reality ensues and perceived value drops sharply to meet actual value. Here's a hint. It happened in 2004, and again in 2008. In a smoother transition than I'm used to, let's talk about EA, as Joystick has quotes from CEO John Riccicello related to this subject. Speaking on NPR's Morning Edition, he was talking about EA's social business, admitting rather frankly that the company isn't where they'd like to be. When it comes to Facebook, while we're number two, I'd say we're a distant number two. I mean, the other guys have lapped us 3 times, he said, referring to Zynga, who indeed leads the pack. Honestly, while I have my grievances with EA, Riccicello does seem a bit more honest about his company's setbacks, and for that alone I tend to cut him more slack than I would someone like Bobby Kotick. I can't excuse everything the company does under his watch, the whole Origin thing is a legit cock-up to name one, but he himself seems more personally reasonable. I feel if I were to sit down and talk with him, we could at least agree to disagree. Now then he says this, which is more interesting. He claims Zynga is more in the data management business, and he says, they're not really in the entertainment business. I think that will eventually die. Consumers want to be entertained. They don't want to be data managed. He goes on to talk about predicting the next big thing, assigning people to figure out what comes after Zynga, in generalities to be sure, and I think he's half right here. The market will level off eventually, which in itself might cause the bubble to burst, but that alone probably isn't going to kill Zynga. On the other hand, financial shenanigans, like the ones we were just talking about, are a much bigger problem. In Zynga and Facebook's case, it's bound to be accounting metrics that range from fudging the numbers to lies printed on also lies co-authored by Bernie Madoff. As long as we're talking about EA, Joystick also reported that EA is indeed planning layoffs. You recall they were kind of beating around the bush over internal speculation, which suggested they could cut between 500 and 1,000 jobs. EA confirmed this week that they are going through restructuring, part of which is laying people off. They wouldn't say how many, but restructuring costs stretch into the $40 million range, $23 million of which is planned for severance pay and other quote-unquote employee-related costs. Quite a bit of money. Spokesman Jeff Brown said it impacts a relatively small number of EA's 9,000 employees, but the magic word relatively means they're dancing around the real numbers, and probably for a very good reason. It's reportedly part of their shift towards digital over physical product, including the social games aspect of it, and if so, you're looking at people like testers, QA, localization, general assistants, and such being first on the chopping block. If the corporate world has taught me anything, it's that changes always hit the grunts hardest. Next up, Sony! Always got room in the schedule for more delicious Sony DOOM! A month ago, they forecast a loss of about 6 billion US, and that came to pass this month, as they reported a loss from last year totaling 456.7 billion yen, which is actually a little less than 6 billion in America bucks, but that's still a very substantial amount. According to MCV, in the wake of this report, Sony's stock fell to a 31-year low on the Nikkei. It isn't doing much better on the New York Stock Exchange, closing recently at $15.37 a share, which is the lowest it's been since 1993. Contributing to this are disappointing figures for the Vita, which sold about 1.8 million units as of March 31st. In fact, that number wasn't even in the initial report, instead bundled under total game device sales. Kaz Hirai gave the actual breakdown later. One can only guess why the numbers were presented in this manner, although the answer seems pretty obvious. Granted, it's only been on the market for 4 months, but it dropped off the charts fast, even during Japan's Golden Week. That's April 29 to May 5th, a long string of Japanese holidays in 1 week. It sold barely 10,000 units, with the 3DS selling about 9 times as many despite being out for a year. Now, the Vita was never going to have the same market penetration as the 3DS. Nintendo's brand is just too well entrenched. There was a chance, however, for Sony to make inroads, but it required an awful lot of things to go right, which they simply haven't. It's expensive, there have been marketing snafus, it's a bare-bones package with lots of peripherals needed, backwards compatibility is a pain in the ass, and so on. But these things live and die by the software, and there's nothing that screams, "I'm worth the $250, you must buy me." It has a decent lineup, but you don't need decent to start with, you need to hit the ground running. Sony is between a rock and a hard place here. Obviously, they can't bail on the Vita, that's just not going to happen, but they need a way to turn this around. The PS4 could be a year off at this point, and they need something to fill the gap. An editorial over on Games Industry puts it pretty bluntly, saying, quote, "More than anything else, that's what the Vita needs. Superb software that puts clear blue water between the capabilities of the Vita and the 3DS, while also making the difference between Vita and iOS devices more clearly defined. It needs to be a handheld title. Not a home console title shoehorned onto a smaller device, but one which leverages the power and capabilities of Vita to great effect." Unquote. And they're absolutely right. The Vita desperately needs something to call its own, and it needs about 5 such things to talk about with E3 coming up. It's not over yet for the Vita, but the window to turn things around is getting slimmer. Personally, I think they could do well by pitching a slew of JRPGs. Lord knows we've a shortage of them lately, and they can make up the meat and potatoes of a library while they search for a system seller. Speaking of E3, our dear friend Michael Pachter was on a recent bonus round over on Game Trailers. Amidst the usual speculation on the panel, Pachter spoke about an upcoming visit to Microsoft to get a preview of their conference stuff. He says, "They told me, don't expect a lot of game stuff. Expect a lot of dashboard, interface, multimedia." Unquote. This is actually in line with the impression I'm getting from Microsoft, that they don't have anything major game-wise to talk about this year, so they're going to focus on the 360 as a multimedia device. On the same show, Adam Sessler talked about how Microsoft basically wants to own the living room, not just for gaming, but for everything, watching TV, movies, etc. Now, nowhere is it written that the press conferences have to be strictly about games. It's the Electronics Entertainment Expo, after all. But I think if they don't have anything to show besides Halo 4, they're making a big mistake and will be barely noticeable this year. In other news, Diablo 3 drops in 2 days, and if my calculations are correct, it will officially be bigger than Jesus. At least, that's the impression I'm getting from Amazon, who, by way of GameSpot, report that it's their most pre-ordered title of all time. Numbers weren't included with that, but we can safely conclude this game's gonna hit 7 figures. Granted, as editor Brendan Sinclair points out, that also includes those free copies thrown in with the World of Warcraft Annual Pass promo. Still, Blizzard is easily going to make a mint off this thing, barring some hilarious fiasco with their online functionality. Which I'm not ruling out, thanks to the always online requirement, that's still a stupid idea, but Blizzard knows how to make their brands last. They're a polished company, they know how to put out a sustainable product for the long term. Look at Warcraft, look at Starcraft. Diablo is very much the same, even though Diablo 2 was 11 years ago. Of course, some of us remember the days of Lost Vikings, Rock and Roll Racing, and Blackthorn, but hell, what can you do? It's kind of funny that the former vanguards of real-time strategy are nowhere to be found in the current RTS market, such as it is, anyway. No Warcraft 4, and the less said about Command & Conquer 4, the better. And by kind of funny, I mean I cry myself to sleep at night at the thought. At least we've got Relic bringing out Company of Heroes 2, but that's a topic for another time. A couple other quick things tonight. The consumer has picked up this doozy. Redbox, as you know, offers video game rentals, yet their kiosks are equipped to dispense only one disc per rental fee. Thus, it's a little odd that they're renting out Max Payne 3, a game with multiple discs on the 360, and the solution has been for Redbox to offer only disc 1 of the game, the complete multiplayer portion and about half the single player. So, let's review. A series renowned for its approach to gameplay and storytelling. Let's face it, the noir theme is Max Payne's thing more than bullet time ever was. And Redbox opts to offer half of that through its kiosks. Can you say customer service fiasco in the making? Because I don't care how many labels you put on the damn thing. People are going to be confused and pissed off when the game prompts them to insert Disc 2. Incidentally, PS3 users dodged a bullet here as their version is all on one disc. Score! And lastly, care of the website thesilentchief.com, who in turn is quoting Game Informer, Tetsuya Nomura was caught talking about Kingdom Hearts, where he said the following. The PS Vita is definitely a powerful device that is very interesting, but because of its high power, there isn't much of a difference with a console. So even if we were to make a game, we would have to be very careful about how to create it for that device. I also feel that it's about time that Kingdom Hearts should go back to being on a console. Unquote. He goes on to say that he'd like to do something about the series being spread over so many platforms, though it's not clear what he meant by do something. Kingdom Hearts, I admit, I've been out of the loop since, Kingdom Hearts 2, which the internet tells me was early 2006, which isn't that long if you're going by the BVT, that's the Blizzard Valve timescale. And if one were to ask me, I think they're in a situation that Valve can actually appreciate. I think they're somewhat intimidated by their own product, that following up on a largely successful second installment, one that radically upped the stakes and widened the scope of the adventure, is a monumental undertaking. Wrapping up every plot thread, closing mysteries that have been hanging for years, meeting fan expectations which have been continually building, returning to work you wrote years ago is really, really daunting. I would be shocked if real, actual work was being done on either Kingdom Hearts 3 or Half-Life 3 beyond purely conceptual stuff at this point. I think people in the companies want to, but the company as a whole finds it easier, indeed safer, to pursue spin-off work and basically stall for time, thinking the stars have to be aligned just so before they're ready to try closing those books. Or hell, maybe I'm misreading it, who knows. Anyway, time for me to punch out. Thanks for joining us. For Random NPC, this is John. Have a good night, everybody. I'll see you next week.